Jeff says again. CSF used to be called Gin Clear when there was no blood or infection in it, I say to Jeff. But probably we're now supposed to use alcohol-free terminology. I soon find the right middle cerebral artery. In reality, only a few millimetres in diameter, it is made huge and menacing by the microscope, a great pink-red trunk of an artery which ominously pulses in time with the heartbeat. I need to follow it deep into the cleft, known as the Sylvian fissure, between the two lobes of the brain, to find the aneurysm in its lair, where it grows off the arterial trunk. With ruptured aneurysms, this dissection of the middle cerebral artery can be a slow and tortuous business, since recent hemorrhage often causes the sides of the two lobes to stick together. Dissecting them is difficult and messy, and there is always the fear that the aneurysm will rupture again while I am doing this. I separate the two lobes of the brain by gently stretching them apart, cutting the minute strands of arachnoid that bind them together with a pair of microscope scissors in one hand while I keep the view clear of spinal fluid and blood with a small sucker. The brain is a mass of blood vessels, and I must try to avoid tearing the many veins and minute arteries, both to prevent bleeding from obscuring the view, and also for fear of damaging the blood supply to the brain. Sometimes, if the dissection is particularly difficult and intense, or dangerous, I will pause for a while, rest my hands on the armrests, and look at the brain I am operating on. Other thoughts that I am thinking as I look at this solid lump of fatty protein covered in blood vessels really made out of the same stuff. And the answer always comes back. They are. And the thought itself is too crazy, too incomprehensible, and I get on with the operation. Today, the dissection is easy. It is as though the brain unzips itself, and only the most minimal manipulation is required on my part for the frontal and temporal lobes to part rapidly, so that within a matter of minutes we are looking at the aneurysm entirely free from the surrounding brain and the dark purple veins glittering in the brilliant light of the microscope. "Well, it's just asking to be clipped, isn't it?" I say to Jeff, suddenly happy and relaxed. The greatest risk is now past. With this kind of surgery, if the aneurysm ruptures before you reach it, it can be very difficult to control the bleeding. The brain suddenly swells and arterial blood shoots upwards, turning the operative site into a rapidly rising whirlpool of angry, swirling red blood through which you struggle desperately to get down to the aneurysm. Seeing this hugely magnified down the microscope, you feel as though you are drowning in blood. One quarter of the blood from the heart goes to the brain. A patient will lose several litres of blood within a matter of minutes if you cannot control the bleeding quickly. Few patients survive the disaster of premature rupture. "Let's have a look at the clips," I say. Erwin hands me the metal tray containing the gleaming titanium aneurysm clips. They come in all shapes and sizes, corresponding to the many shapes and sizes of aneurysms. I look at the aneurysm down the microscope and at the clips and then back at the aneurysm. 6 millimetre short right-angled, I tell him. He picks out the clip and loads it onto the applicator. The applicator consists of a simple instrument with a handle formed by two curved leaf springs joined at either end. Once the clip is loaded at the instrument's tip, all you have to do is press the springs of the handle together to open the blades of the clip. Position the open blades carefully across the neck of the aneurysm, and then allow the springs to separate gently apart within your hand, so that the clip blades close across the aneurysm, sealing it off from the artery from which it has grown, so that blood can no longer get into it. By finally letting the springs of the handle separate even more fully, the clip is released from the applicator, which you can then withdraw, leaving the clip clamped across the aneurysm for the rest of the patient's life. That, at least, is what is supposed to happen, and had always happened with the hundreds of similar operations I had carried out in the past. Since this looks a straightforward aneurysm to clip, I let Jeff take over, and I clamber out of the operating chair so that he can replace me. My assistants are all as susceptible to the siren call of aneurysms as I am. They long to operate on them. But the fact that most aneurysms are now coiled rather than clipped means that it is no longer possible to train them properly, and I can only give them the simplest and easiest parts of the occasional operation to do under very close supervision. Once Jeff is settled in, the nurse hands him the loaded clip applicator, and he cautiously moves it towards the aneurysm. Nothing much seems to happen, and down the assistant's arm of the microscope, I nervously watch the clip wobble uncertainly around the aneurysm. It is 100 times more difficult and nerve-wracking to train a junior surgeon than it is to operate oneself. After a while, probably only a few seconds, though it feels much longer, I can stand it no longer. "You're fumbling. I'm sorry, but I'll have to take over." Jeff says nothing and climbs out of the chair. It would be a rash surgical trainee who ever complained to his boss, especially at a moment like this, and we change places again. I take the applicator and place it against the aneurysm, pressing the springs of the handle together. Nothing happens. Bloody hell! The clip won't open! That was the problem I was having! Jeff says, sounding a little aggrieved. Bloody hell! Well, give me another applicator. This time, I easily open the clip and slip the blades over the aneurysm. I open my hand and the blades close, neatly clipping the aneurysm. The aneurysm, defeated, shrivels since it is now no longer filling with high-pressure arterial blood. I sigh deeply. I always do when the aneurysm is finally dealt with. But to my horror, I find that this second applicator has an even more deadly fault than the first. Having closed the clip over the aneurysm, the applicator refuses to release the clip. I cannot move my hand for fear of tearing the minute, fragile aneurysm of the middle cerebral artery and causing a catastrophic hemorrhage. I sit there, motionless, with my hand frozen in space. If an aneurysm is torn off its parent artery, you can usually only stop the bleeding by sacrificing the artery, which will result in a major stroke. I swear violently while trying to keep my hand steady. "What the fuck do I do now?" I shout to no one in particular. After a few seconds, it feels like minutes, I realize that I have no choice other than to remove the clip, despite the risk that this might cause the aneurysm to burst. I reclose the applicator handle, and to my relief, the blades of the clip open easily. The aneurysm suddenly swells and springs back into life, filling instantly with arterial blood. I feel it is laughing at me and about to burst, but it doesn't. I throw myself back in my chair, cursing even more violently, and then hurl the offending instrument across the room. "That's never happened before," I shout, but then